December 7th, 1941, Pearl Harbor Day.
Yes.
Tell us about that day and your early recollections.
Well, of course, it was a Sunday, and I remember I'd been to church. We'd gone to church, and we'd come home, and we're eating at our family home on 409 West 11th in Bristow. And there we heard it. I cannot remember whether we heard directly over the radio. I rather suspect we did. An announcement that Pearl Harbor had been attacked. It's one of those things you remember where you were when you heard about it. And, of course, they already, and by that I mean the administration, the Army, the armed forces, had begun to build up the Army, and we were woefully unprepared up until, oh, say, beginning in about 1940. But the Air Corps particularly began to have cadet classes, et cetera. They needed teachers. They needed people to work as well as people to fight. Those of us in the class, and I think there were about a dozen of us taking weather forecasting at Spartan School of Aeronautics, we all had the opportunity, I believe all of us did, I know I did, to become a teacher of weather to basic cadets, basic training. Primary, basic, and advanced were the three levels, and weather was taught at the basic course. It was civil service, and I had pay of $2,000 a year. I got every penny of it. There were no deductions whatsoever, and I considered myself to be rich. I was 19 years old, and earning $166 a month clear was a real accomplishment as far as I was concerned. Actually, I was married at the time. I married in December of 41, a Bristow girl that I'd been going with.
And her name?
Her legal name was Edwin Rollstone Freeland. She was a member of the Freeland family, which was an early family in Bristow. At any rate, I went to Randolph Field as an assistant instructor in meteorology. I can't remember the title, I'm sorry, but nevertheless, civil service position. Received training at Randolph Field just a month or two, and then went to Perrin Field at Sherman, Texas, to teach aviation cadets. That must have been in April or May of 42, and I taught until the draft board began to breathe on my neck. I was in Bristow draft region, and the draft board sort of gave indications that I was going to be drafted, even though I was in an essential occupation, shall we say, teaching aviation cadets weather. And the superintendent of the school there at Perrin Field, the major who was head of the ground school, had been a superintendent of schools in Wisconsin and had been enticed into the Army just as I had been, but he was actually a major, appointed a major, but he was a former superintendent. Nevertheless, wanted to keep me. Apparently, I satisfied him as far as teaching aviation cadets. He said, why don't you enlist right here at Perrin Field? We'll give you a brief training, and then you'll be back here teaching, but you'll be back as an enlisted person. I spent, I think, a week in rudimentary training at Perrin Field. I never went through basic training. I never did experience what all of the people who've been in the various parts of the Army or Navy likewise probably. I shortcut that because he wanted me to teach, and I got rudimentary introductory training on the ground, and then went back to teaching as a private aviation cadets who are also privates, you realize. But what the major said was that they'll never respect a person of their same rank, cadets, also being about my age. Most of them were 18 to 21 years old. So immediately he appointed me to be a corporal. So I was a corporal from then on for a year or two. At any rate, I stumbled while I was there across a brochure that offered good students, shall we say, an opportunity to apply to a training to become weather officers, but it was not advanced. It was called pre-meteorology training, and there were about a dozen liberal arts schools, universities, where that was carried on. Reed College, Carleton College, I think the University of Chicago, Vanderbilt. The school that I was sent to, though I was accepted by the Air Corps to go to a pre-meteorology school, and I was sent to Pomona College in Claremont, California, where I spent a full year while people were shooting each other all over the world, but I was in training in college. Originally, there were about 250 of us at Pomona, and of course, the schools had been emptied of men by the fact that so many of them had drafted. They were eager to have a contract with the Army for teaching. At the end of that period, though, instead of becoming weather officers, they closed not only all of those schools, but they even closed cadet training. By that time, and I'm talking about 1944, this is early 44, January of 44, it was obvious that we were prevailing in both the Pacific and the European theater, but we were running short of men, active men, particularly the ground forces. And I was given the opportunity to decide several things that I could do. In the Air Corps, I could have done electronics, which would have been marvelous for me. I wish I'd done that. But I elected to have additional training in the Army Specialized Training Program, but they closed that before I was ever enrolled in anything. Those of us who were in the ASTP or going to be in the ASTP were sent to the ground forces. I was sent to Camp Adair in Oregon near Corvallis and assigned to be a machine gunner in a rifle company. A rifle company has three rifle platoons and a light weapons platoon. That is a couple of squads of light machine guns, two light machine guns, 30 caliber, and three mortars, the light mortars, 60 millimeters. In every battalion, there is a heavy weapons company which has a water-cooled machine gun. Ours were air-cooled, light machine gun, air-cooled. The heavy weapons company had bigger mortars, 81-millimeter mortars, and water-cooled, which can continue firing indefinitely. Ours, if you fire it too much too long, the barrel gets red hot and begins to buckle. At any rate, I was a machine gunner. Needless to say, all of us who'd come out of the various branches of programs that have been cut, our morale was not great. And all of us AST people, there were several hundred of us, I know, after we'd been to Camp Adair only perhaps a month, were called to the baseball diamond for orientation, shall we say. And our speaker was George C. Marshall, General Marshall, a four-star general at the time, who was head of all forces, not just the Army, but the Navy, all the armed forces. Apparently, they were aware. And, of course, the 70th Division, where I'd been sent, was only one of many. It had been organized just for the war. I used to know how many divisions were in Europe, but it's an awful lot of them, not to include the ones in the Pacific. But nevertheless, we were just a small cog, is what I'm trying to say. He came and told us, I can almost give it verbatim, "Men, you are called by your country because we need you. We are winning the war in the Pacific. We are winning the war in Europe. But we have found while we control the air, our Navy is superior in both cases. Our weakness, both in numbers and in quality, is in the ground forces. We need infantrymen, and you've been chosen because your country is in a position where we're short of people, and we expect you to do your duty." Now, actually, it did make a difference to us, but I think time also made a difference to us, and we gradually adapted and bonded as best you can at any enterprise where you depend on each other. You have to have a bond.
When he spoke and afterward, those you were with, were you gung-ho?
It helped, is really what I can say. Being paid attention to helped, and I'm sure he didn't go to very many of those. He couldn't have. This was right. A busy man.
And you knew General George C. Marshall, who he was.
Oh, yes, we knew indeed.